You are now listening to the Will and Brown Vicinity NAACP Podcast. I am William Weston.
And I'm Samantha Whitfield, President of the Branch.
Oh, good. How are you doing, Sam, Madam President?
I'm doing all right today. How you doing, Will?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well. And we can start off on the national level.
As per usual.
Yes. going down our order, the Brett Kavanaugh nomination and calling and informing our elected officials to not support that nomination until November.
Right. Hashtag halt the hearing.
Halt the hearing. Yes.
Here in New Jersey, Senator Booker and Senator Menendez both oppose, you know, the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the justice, you know, to the court justices until November, until after November elections. But in other states, senators do favor, you know, are in favor of getting pushing that vote through now. And what we're asking is not only for New Jersey residents to call their senators, but also for anyone else listening and for people in New Jersey to encourage their friends and family and network in other states to call their senators, write their senators, and tell them to halt the hearing. This could affect us for decades, really.
It could change the outlook of the court and have a very conservative court for the next, maybe the next one or two generations. So it is imperative to push back and halt this nomination, especially as it appears the administration starts to crash down on itself. This may be something that gets put in before that happens.
Yeah, before our whole government implodes.
And his nomination could potentially have some current rulings overturned.
Right, right. So that is definitely call your senators and tell them to halt the hearing. You know, in order to protect our rights and our freedoms, we really need to have someone in that seat that's going to be thinking about everybody and not just ruling on what their personal beliefs are.
So the next topic on the national stage is the federal court ruled in favor of the NAACP case restoring DACA. So that's good news to hear. That's a plus in this time. That's a positive.
That was a big win for the NAACP this month. The NAACP have filed this case in September 2017 against President Trump and Attorney General Sessions and a whole bunch of other agencies against, you know, the ruling for dismissing DACA. So I guess on August 3rd, the U.S. District Court affirmed its prior ruling that the Department of Homeland Security violated the Administrative Procedure Act by rescinding the DACA program without sufficient explanation. So I think that's a big win. We'll see how the administration takes this news. I haven't really seen any updates from the administration, especially in the wake of all of these guilty pleas and verdicts. So yes. I guess DACA has taken a little bit of a back burner in the national spotlight right now, but this is a win for the NAACP and a win for DACA.
With the way things are going, it's a real big win because things are changing daily.
Yeah. But the DACA recipients have come here at no fault of their own. And some of them have built lives here in the United States and serve our country. They offer us services. They hold jobs here. Some people say, you know, they don't pay taxes. They are issued Social Security numbers and they do pay taxes here. So the DACA program is a legal pathway to citizenship and it should be respected as such. It shouldn't be rescinded because, you know, some people, I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. Xenophobia, you know, isolationist. I don't know what the thinking
what
is.
What is the xenophobia? Yeah.
yes. but I'm looking at the requirements for DACA. So basically you have to be a productive citizen in a sense, studying, graduated from high school. You know, you have to be moving forward. You can't just be around. Like they're just clear. You're here for over 10 years. You got here before your 16th birthday. So
you can't be like a slouch and be on DACA. They're making sure that you're working, that you're being a productive member of society. So you know, that isn't that the type of people, the type of immigrants that we want here, the type of people that we want? Isn't that what America stands for?
Yes, yes. Moving us forward, like adding more people who have a net plus to this nation.
And progressive mindset.
Yes, a progressive mindset, but you'd rather hurt the nation to be more isolationist, or you know, remove the other from. And what is the other? We are the other. Actually, we're all the other, but there's a certain.
Right, because it's contradictory to what America was founded on. This is a nation of immigrants who have come here for one reason or the other, either for refuge or to get away from Britain, you know?
Yes, and after one generation, they're not DACA anymore. They're, you know, once you pass this generation, they're citizens. Mm-hmm. Right. And some people were brought here.
Yeah.
No choice of their own.
So, yeah, that's a big win. And, you know, we hope that things will continue to move forward and the DACA recipients will continue to be able to receive the privileges of the DACA program.
And what is the purpose of DACA? Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals is a kind of administrative relief from deportation. The purpose of DACA is to protect eligible immigrant youth who came to the United States when they were children from deportation.
Okay.
DACA gives young undocumented immigrants, number one, protection from deportation, and number two, a work permit. The program expires after 2 years, subject to renewal.
So, and yeah. It's not, a lot of people associate DACA with Hispanic and Latino populations, but there's a large Black population that are DACA participants, and they need our support as well.
No doubt. And it's just a civil rights issue. And once again, it's this thought of the other. Like, it's almost, and I'd hate to point to the president, but he referenced to certain countries a certain way. And also, hey, we want more immigrants from Norway. So it's a certain it's a certain type that this is directed to.
Right. It's a certain of, it perpetuates a view of a model immigrant and who that model immigrant is and who can receive pathways to citizenship. Because I don't see anyone trying to revoke Melania's citizenship. I'm just saying.
Exactly. She would be the other. And at one point we were all the other, but we're here now. And
the melting pot.
Yes.
Together as one.
So beautiful. Fighting for civil rights.
Moving on to the state. So there's some things going on the state level. We talked about last time the desegregation of schools, and we didn't really have much information on that lawsuit, but more information has come out from the New Jersey Coalition for Diverse and Inclusive Schools. And they have a website. It is called inclusiveschoolsnewjersey.org. And it outlines what the issue is and their plan is to desegregate schools. One of their solutions is to create new magnet schools that draw students from many districts to one school. And I'm not really sure what that would look like. I think they had a similar magnet school program that they implemented in New York that I think has been successful. So that is something that could be possible and work here. I mean, theoretically, if it worked in New York.
Yes. And also another solution would be implementing volunteer transfer plans. Parents in select school districts could agree to send their children to schools in other districts in ways that increase diversity while expanding educational opportunities. Now, I'm not sure of how that would look either.
Well, that kind of sounds like busing.
I'm just going to say I'm not sure how that would look, because if there's a, this is what the information we found on the website. So if there's a more detailed plan that has, it does sound like students are going to be brought from different places. A bus may be involved, but I understand why this is in place, because of the, in New Jersey is the sixth highest segregated state. There's been studies done showing children learn better in diverse classrooms. So I understand why this was put together. And this was not only the NAACP, but we got the Latino Action Network and quite a few other organizations coming together for this lawsuit for the desegregation of schools. I see Shiloh Baptist Church, Rutgers Center for Corporate Law and Governance. So it is not just one or two. It looks like a group of people, but I'm looking forward to getting more information concerning more specific solution, because currently it does say we don't impose a one size fits all solution, but some of the solutions sounds like it may include busing. But I understand why, and I definitely would like a diverse, because I do think there's a crisis in the schools. And there seems to be strong opposition to the lawsuit in some places. I was looking at some pushback videos on YouTube concerning this lawsuit, and there's some areas that they're like, we don't want to dilute our schools. Like, that's literally what they're saying. We don't want our schools to be diluted with these other students and overcrowded.
Well, I mean, and I think that was kind of the air of school desegregation in 1954 when Brown versus the Board of Education had came about. I think it was a similar air of, we don't want to dilute our schools. We don't want to overpopulate our schools with a new population. It's just then it was very overtly racially charged. And now the segregation has become more systematic. It's not just specifically about Black kids and kids of color go to these schools and white kids go to these schools. It's more about where you live in the catchment area of the school districts that you are a part of, which forces you to be in very homogenous schools. I think the bigger issue is not just school segregation. It's also about segregation, period.
No doubt.
Segregation in housing and in the towns that we live in, because that's really the bigger issue. That's why our schools are so segregated now, because we are living
in pockets.
In a segregated way.
There's this residential segregation and just areas where it is homogenous, and you go to the local school, so then that makes the local school homogenous. So there is a much bigger issue at hand, but this is addressing, I guess, one of the consequences from the issue. And I do think it can help, but I think in the long term, hopefully we can address what's really going on with this residential segregation.
And these methods aren't new. Even the magnet school theory is not a new theory to desegregate schools. It's been done before. And this was a program that was also implemented in the 1980s to further desegregate schools. So I think we just have to, it's the same ideas that are being repackaged. And I think we need to think outside the box and really come to understand what the real issues are, and not just look at one piece of the pie and say, hey, the schools are segregated, so let's tackle school desegregation. We need to look at the bigger piece of the pie and really find out what the root cause is, which is residential segregation, and how do we change residential segregation if that's what we want to do.
You're right, if that's what we want to do, because there is some thought there that maybe we could build our own, or at least be prosperous in these little residential areas that have residential segregation. But do you think that this helps if we can have a more diverse schools? Do you think, even though there's a bigger issue, will this, at least if this moves forward with a proper solution, could it help?
Well, I mean, studies have shown that children learn better in diverse classrooms. And I think that's wrapped in with the idea of exposure. If you're only exposed to people who look like you, you're not exposed to, you know, other ways of living, other ways of thinking, other points of view. So all children learn best when they have the opportunity to attend diverse schools and learn alongside students of diverse racial and ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds. It has been shown to produce higher proficiency rates. It really relates to a bigger issue, and the school catchment areas are determined by the census, which is determined by people answering the census, which is being targeted and at risk because of The citizenship question that they're looking to add to the census, and also prison gerrymandering, which is counting prisoners in rural areas where they are imprisoned instead of in their home states that they will be returning to. So all of those things contribute to the funding that school districts receive. And, you know, if that data is being skewed and manipulated in a way that is defunding the places that need it the most, there's a bigger issue at hand.
There is a bigger issue at hand. New Jersey schools are among the top six most racially segregated in the country, and the situation is getting worse. The campaign to integrate New Jersey schools is one of the central civil rights struggles of our time. It is key to tackling poverty and inequality. It is essential to making our state economically competitive in the global economy. Like you're saying, I do believe there's a bigger issue at hand, and it's not just the schools. But I think it's a stopgap measure and could be beneficial for the short term, but you're fighting an uphill battle if you don't deal with the core issues.
And we just need to act on it. So there are some actions that you can take to help support the effort. On the website, you can take the pledge to support the desegregation of schools. I guess that's one of the lowest level actions that you can take. But in pledging to support, what really needs to be done is calling and emailing Governor Murphy and spreading the word about it and letting people know about the injustice that's happening in our school systems and to our children of color, you know?
Yeah. So what else is on the state level? We have the state convention coming up, and aren't you the vendor chair?
I am. And we have some vendors coming in. The vendors are rolling on in. We got some exciting vendors this year, some new vendors up. We have, and some from last year, Desirables Boutique will be back. And we are also looking to have some police departments there looking for new recruits and recruits of color, which is a great venue for that type of publicity. So we do hope that people come out to the state convention. It will be in Princeton this year, once again, at the Westin at Forestville Village. And it's going to be from October 12th through the 14th.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Vendor Chair. And it's refreshing to hear about the police departments attending the convention and recruiting persons of color, because diversity in law enforcement will grant a greater understanding of the community. And I believe there will be less of these racially charged incidents that are occurring. A lot of these things happen because law enforcement doesn't look like us. And
right.
So if they're more diverse and they can relate and less bias in that interaction. If we have people that resemble us.
Yeah. We also are having a couple keynote speakers. One is Ilyasa Sabaz, and the other is Fania E. Davis. They'll be speaking at the gala and the brunch at the convention. And they do a lot of work around youth and civil rights and criminal justice. So it'll be great to get some words of encouragement and really hear the work that they've been doing. And, you know, sometimes it's good to know that you're not in it alone. So when you hear about people doing work in other places and the work that they're doing, it inspires you to be more active in your own community. So come on out and get some good words.
Yes. And Ms. Shabazz is the daughter of Malcolm X.
Yes.
So, yeah. I just heard her recently speaking on YouTube just to acquaint myself prior to seeing her speak. And I need to get my ticket in my room for this event, because it's coming up quickly. Early bird. Yes. When does the early bird pricing end?
Early bird ends August 31st. So get your tickets quick. It's at the very affordable full rate of $175, which, look, I know you making that face, but it's not that bad for a 3-day convention. And that includes all of the workshops and the gala and the brunch. And they're not going to charge you $175 and not feed you.
Does that pay for my room too?
No, you know it ain't paying for your room.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just trying to make it clear. I was hoping that room was included, because then I'm like, oh, this sounds exciting. It still sounds exciting. In fact, I am looking forward to it. I
know you are. Also, we'll be adding in a morning fitness to the convention, which is going to be great for those fitness buffs out there. Some early morning workouts, you know, to get our fit on before we do the work of civil rights.
Yes, which is going to prepare us to fight civil rights after we're nice and pumped in the morning and active. We can take that same energy and face what we have to face for the cause of civil rights.
Yes, all of that. And then we go on party at night.
It is such good information. And I'm going to try to get a lot of NAACP paraphernalia.
Yes, the store will be there. And they'll have, I hear through the grapevine, they're going to be having a sale. So, all right. Okay. So
our branch meeting, the Willingboro and Vicinity branch meeting, was August 14th. And what did we have going on there, Madam President?
So we had a couple things going on. We did talk a little bit about the Willingboro flooding. And I know people have been asking about the movement and our movement on that. Right now, we are talking to residents and trying to find out what's going on and what happened from their point of view and their perspective, or, you know, what happened on the resident side. We got a statement from one of the elected officials concerning the cause of the storm.
I have the email open from the council person. I'll just read the statement. The official cause of the storm was something the professionals are calling a microburst. Our infrastructure is well and inspected accordingly to a table for inspections. Apparently, high tide, full moon, 6 inches of rain in 2 hours caused water to come into the town from the Rancocas Creek. Normally, it runs out to the creek and not come into the town from the creek. And that was the statement. So basically, the statement from the council person was saying that there's, you know, no liability from the town. Everything was properly maintained. But I've come into contact with residents, and I believe you have also, that have stated that maybe the infrastructure wasn't being maintained. They allowed some of the sewer inlets to be clogged and not the same maintenance, and they would clear them periodically. They weren't seeing that. So if anybody has any information from a resident standpoint, you know, that's the statement we received from the council. But if anybody listening to this, I'm Will Weston on Facebook. You can friend me, send me a message. I would like to see what residents are saying. And I actually put a post on Facebook in our Willingboro group to find out if anybody went to the MARC program and what were their feedback. From the township standpoint, they said it was successful, and it may have been. I just would like to hear the other side.
Well, concerning the MARC program, I did speak to one resident who, you know, wasn't as pleased with the MARC program as I had hoped that they would be. The resident has about $90,000 worth of damage on their house, and they received a $150 gift card to assist. So the relief that residents are getting is not substantial enough to really pay for and cover the repairs and the damage that has been done. In many cases, their homeowner's insurance won't cover the damage because the cause of the flooding did not come from the house or come from inside the house. Also, cases have indicated that FEMA will not respond or, you know, isn't involved because the flooding did not come from the creek. It isn't considered a natural disaster for FEMA to be able to get involved because of the flooding. And statements from counselors that we don't meet any of the disaster minimums to be able to qualify for any of that funding. But nonetheless, there are residents who are out of their homes, who haven't been able to return yet, who are experiencing mold and have sewage in their homes, so it's unsanitary. So, you know, our main concern as the NAACP is to help the residents, and there has have been some calls that this is a justice issue now, because people are feeling that this situation would have been handled differently if it were in, you know, a white community or not in a community of color. So we are still investigating, looking into the situation, gathering resident accounts. So if you would like to join in with us and work on getting relief, we encourage you to email us at willingboronaacp@gmail.com. And, you know, we'll work together to come to the best solution for the residents, because that is our main priority.
Also with the MARC program, and I just wanted to add, through that program, the local government wasn't directly helping. They were putting together the resources. In fact, 12 to 15 residents did get construction help through the MARC program, but that was the United Methodist Church who was providing the construction help, not the town. The town more so is facilitating bringing together resources with residents, but not actually providing anything themselves. You know, part of that, I believe, is because they don't feel liable, but they're trying to help. I would like to see objectively, was there something lacking? Was there something missing that helped exacerbate the flooding and the flood damage? Some people didn't have the specifically flood insurance, and without that flood insurance, you don't get any help. You don't get, your insurance company doesn't pay out. So all that damage is on you. You might just have to lose the home because of the amount of damage to your home. And for FEMA or the state to come in, part of the criteria that they were saying, the council was saying, was that it would have to affect a minimum of 25 homes. I don't know. I don't know if it was a minimum of 25, it would seem like it would be, but it would be the minimum of 25 homes and 40% of the damage of the appraised value of the home. So whatever that's how much damage you would have to get for the state to kick in.
So what we need to do now is really try to compile a list of at least 25 homes that were affected. And right now, from the accounts that we have 3. I mean, we will continue to work on this. And if you are interested in getting involved in this effort, please send us an email to willingboronaacp@gmail.com.
True. True that.
Oh, last but not least, we got to talk about voting.
It's that time.
Nearing that time. And the end for registration is October 16th. So we're getting close to the registration deadline for the November election.
Yes, November's approaching quickly. As I was told during our Jazz Fest, vote like your life depends on it.
Because it does.
Yes, because it definitely does. And if you are registered, it's time to vote. It's, you may not feel like it matters, but it does, especially in local elections. So
it's only midterms.
Yes. You might have that thought. It's only midterms, but it's time to turn out. It's time to make your voice heard. If you weren't voting before, it's definitely time to vote now. We're nonpartisan, but I know we want everyone to exercise their right to vote.
Just vote, period. And really, you have to think about the history of gaining the right to vote and, you know, how hard our ancestors had to fight. They risked their lives. Some of them lost their lives in this fight for us to be able to exercise our right to vote, exercise this privilege to vote. And I know there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's some people saying, oh, if you have committed a misdemeanor, then you can't vote. And any of these, if you've ever been convicted of any kind of crime, you can't vote. That's not always the case. It's not always true. So you really need to check your status, see if you can vote, and don't just be passive about it. And just think, if it wasn't this important, if it wasn't so important for citizens to vote, why would they make it so difficult to do? It's on a Tuesday.
I would even go further than that. You know, definitely vote, but you can run for office. It's something that anyone can do.
It is something that anyone can do. The people that represent us are just people too. And we have a voice that is just as big as theirs. And we need voices to represent our issues, to represent our point of view.
And just doing a quick search, out of the 100 senators currently serving, only 3 are African-American. There's Tim Scott, South Carolina Republican, Cory Booker, New Jersey, Democrat, and Kamala Harris, California, Democrat. And it's a short list of African-American senators that ever served.
We talked about having homogenous schools. When our representation is homogenous, that's a very big issue. So we definitely need to diversify our representation and have all voices heard from all different points of view and perspectives.
Right on, right on. I'm having a vote party, you know, in the booth.
Can't you going to get your strobe light on?
It's going to be an all-white vote party at the Kennedy Plaza.
Get out to vote. We really need to get out to vote at our meeting. I did charge our members and the people that attended the meeting to go and talk to their neighbors at the very least. We gave out voter registration forms. We said, if you don't want to talk and knock on doors, at least drop them in people's mailboxes. Give people the opportunity to register to vote and to let their voice be heard. But we are working on our own canvassing schedule. So if you are interested in helping out with some nonpartisan canvassing of the Willingboro and vicinity area, send us an email to that same email address, willingboronaacp@gmail.com. But also, we did receive some correspondence, which, disclaimer, you want to give the disclaimer, Will, in your official voice?
The NAACP is a nonprofit organization and does not endorse candidates or political parties.
But we do support issues, and we do give all candidates the opportunity and the platform to get their message out. So with that said, we did receive some correspondence from the Democratic congressional candidate, Andy Kim, and his office. They sent us some correspondence concerning their voter registration efforts.
I feel that. And who is Andy Kim running against?
Tom MacArthur.
Okay.
Who was the father of the revival of the Health Care Act. We are a nonpartisan organization once again. And we want to give everyone the same opportunities. All right. So let's get to what you're reading.
Actually, I bought a book. I'm actually still working on Just Mercy, but I bought Barracoon on Kindle, Barracoon by Zora Neale Hurston, about the last of the live cargo from Africa. She went to interview this gentleman who's believed to be the last person brought over. He remembers being captured and him coming over here. So that's what I'm looking forward to reading. I'm still working on Brian Stevenson's Just Mercy, which is a heart wrench in every page because, yeah, these men are in death row and they have the lack of representation, which still happens today.
And who did you say Barracoon was by?
Zora Neale Hurston.
Oh, okay.
And the book was actually published this year, but it was written in the 1930s.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, the book was shelved because she didn't want to change the language of the African gentleman because she wrote it in phonically the way he was saying his words. You know, since he's a transplant, and the from my understanding, the company that was going to publish it wanted her to, you know, put it in English, in modern English, and she refused. And so it was shelved.
Oh, wow. So that, I mean, that's probably profound in itself, just really being able to read what it would have sounded like, or I look forward to you starting to read that. So I guess what I'm reading, I'm still getting through The New Jim Crow. It's also heavy reading because just every time it just makes me so angry. I just get so angry at the injustice and how blatant the injustice is and how we continue to look over it. Some of the issues that was in the chapter that I just finished were very much surrounding what we were talking about just a couple minutes ago concerning voter rights and voter disenfranchisement, because, you know, they lead people who have been convicted of crimes to believe that they can't vote. And also, some people don't know that that's a right that they are giving up when they plead guilty to a crime that they may not have committed, for a lesser sentence or, you know, for whatever reasons they have and they plead guilty, that that's a right that they're giving up forever. So that's a major issue. And voter disenfranchisement is something that we need to get the word out about. And not only that, but really educate people who have been committed of crimes or who feel like they may not be able to vote because of something in their past. So just get their status checked and really be sure before you count yourself out and before you cancel out your own voice. You know, let them tell you no before you tell yourself no. Yeah. So that is one thing. But also to supplement my reading, I am an avid podcast listener. So I have been listening to another podcast called Historically Black. It's a little older, and it came out around the opening of the African American History Smithsonian Museum. And that is available for download on any of your, wherever you receive your podcast, whatever you're listening to us on. Historically Black is also on. And they have some really cool episodes. Some of the artifacts that people were sending in, they would dig deeper into the stories of voting papers or marriage certificates and different, you know, artifacts that go back generations and the stories that surround them. So it was really cool to hear some of those stories and, you know, just hear the rich history of our people.
And that's called Historically Black?
Historically Black.
Okay.
And
check that one out.
It's put on by APM Reports and the Washington Post.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out. I'm gonna see if I can get that.
Yeah, check it out. Check it out.
Yes, and
all right. I think that's all I have.
Yeah, that's definitely all I have.
All right, we thought today was gonna be short, and we talked it up. So
yeah.
But we hope you enjoyed this month's episode of Stay in the Fight, and as always,
stay in the fight.